Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 41. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me as always is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man?
I'm musing to myself.
You're musing?
Yeah, musing. I'm musing on the topic of my VoIP line has been dead all day, and I don't care. I mean, previously phones were a big deal. Like, if they went down, like, people started yelling and were angry, but I mean, in the era, You got Skype, clearly how we're calling each other now. You got a cell phone, you got Hangouts, you got Telegram, you got Slack, you got email, you got 40,000 different ways to communicate. Your actual direct desk line is honestly the least important one in many cases.
So, oh, yeah.
Times have changed in the world of availability. And voice, once the sacred cow and third rail that would definitely get you fired if it went down for too long, it just doesn't really matter anymore.
Yeah, now take the email down for more than an hour and see what happens, though.
Oh, everything will be on fire. Everything will be on fire. Yeah, cows will be flying.
Yep. Well, John, this is awesome. Last week, we had Chase McCarty on to talk a little bit about vSAN 6.6, and it went so long that we had to extend it to a second edition, and Jace is not available to talk today, so we're bringing in another vSAN expert that's part of our team. This is the great thing about having we've got a deep bench, if you will. So we're bringing in Mr. Peter Keeler, who's a second-time offender on the podcast. Peter, welcome back to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Pete. Happy to be back, and yes, I'm happy to fill in for Jace in this case, and I think this is a good problem to have when we have so many features in this latest release of vSAN that you guys ran out of time on speaking about all of them. So happy to help here.
Yeah. Last week we started by talking about at-rest encryption, which was pretty cool. We talked a little bit about unicast. We went quite a few places with Mr. Jace, but we did not get to some more fun things that we definitely wanted to talk to you about. Some of the more specifics around the enhancements in performance for 6.6. Also want to talk to you and John about the easy install and config assist. And if we have time, maybe we can cover some of the new metrics that have been released. Does that sound like a good agenda for the podcast?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So let's get started.
Sweet. Why don't we start with the easy install? Have you played with the easy install yet? Or you have any input on that?
Yeah, so this is really one of those features that when we were looking at introducing and making vSAN easier to deploy, especially in greenfield environments, one of the biggest challenges was being able to bootstrap a new environment. And the challenge behind that was that you needed to create a vSAN data store with a single vSAN host.
Yeah.
And it was a chicken and egg problem there. So with introducing easy install, this really guides that user through that process. And the nice part about it is that it's fully baked in to the installer for vCenter. So the user is just able to walk through the process. And it was one of those things I noticed the first time that I had the opportunity to work with it. It was really something that I thought, wow, okay, this is a game changer, simply because it removed all of those challenges, those barriers that so many people had in those greenfield installations, so that they could get vSAN really up and running as fast as possible.
Yeah, I thought it was just a checkbox anyway. Isn't that what I heard? Just check a box and vSAN's up and running?
It's three clicks, Pete.
Three clicks. Not that's what it is.
There you go. No, but what is interesting though, and I just realized I need to post the video of this, so that'll be in the show notes also. But from the if you watch the video of this, you realize the vSAN piece is actually really simple. You're just setting, it's basically you're setting up your vCSA like you normally would. And then there's an added step where you're setting up the vSAN data store name. You're setting up your HA cluster name, because obviously vSAN requires a cluster to be configured, even if it is just one host in it.
Right.
And then you're adding some disks to it and selecting whether you want to go ahead. There's a checkbox for dedupe and compression. And there's another checkbox if you want to make the VCSA thin, always by default at reserve space. Just been a default behavior for a long time. So you got two checkboxes. You got a cluster name, a data store name, and then you select some disks. Although it does try to guess which disks are the cache and capacity. There is some, what's the term for it, Pete? We're deprecating the auto drive, and now it's like smart drive, or it's something snazzy that Christian Dickman came up with. The idea is previously you would try to automatically just say, oh, these drives are cache, these are capacity. The thing is, with all flash, everything's a flash drive. So now it makes some assumed guesses, but it doesn't go ahead and execute them into a disk group. It makes you confirm them.
Yeah, I forget what the exact terminology was on that one.
But overall, it's still not that many steps. So
now, is there a difference between the easy install and config assist?
Config assist, it's for your day two operations. Once you've actually set up, you've got your VCSA up, you've got your host up, you add some others in, it will help you basically complete the installation, but it will also look for things within your environment that maybe need to be remediated or configuration improvements, making you aware of them.
Okay.
So some examples of that are you've got your first host up and you've added some other hosts, but maybe you forgot to set up VM kernel ports for vSAN on them, or vMotion even. And there's actually a wizard, and I've got a blog you can find at thenicholson.com. It's at the top looking at this. And what it'll actually do is, previously you'd have to go to each host, you have to go to each distributed, you know, if it was a simple switch, you have to go to each one.
Yep.
Create a VM kernel port, assign it, click like four times, check what type you want, and do all this. And so it was a lot of repetitive work.
Very repetitive.
And yeah, you could script this, but I always felt like if you're setting up a small cluster, like five hosts, you're like, do I really want to write a script for this? Or am I just going to sit here and click repeatedly? And so it kind of, you get in this, awkward space. I'm just going to waste time. At least that's what I would often do. Well, now there's actually a bulk VM kernel port configuration wizard. And this is really cool because you can use this for vSAN, you can use this for vMotion. And if it recognizes you don't have all of your VM kernel ports set up correctly, it will let you type the IP address and subnet of the first one, and then it'll go sequentially. So if the last octet of the first VM kernel port, you know, you've got 10.10.10.1, it'll assume the next one is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And it uses the same order you added the host to the cluster. So when you add your host to the cluster, make sure to add them sequentially if you want your VM kernel ports to have a similar sequential numbering system.
Yeah, and I would add also to that is that, you know, I think, John, what you mentioned there about that no man's land there with regards to, should I automate something with respect to improving the speed of a deployment in an environment, is you really have to weigh the cost of that effort in the first place in order to do that. So with vSAN easy install and then moving on into the config assist option, that's really something that I think helps bridge that gap where you have these clusters that, you know, maybe at some point, yeah, they might really benefit from some automation, but through just making this process more bulletproof within the UI, I think everybody's going to benefit from that.
Oh, absolutely. My first lab that I built on vSAN, that was the very first thing I forgot was my VM kernel ports. And then I had to painstakingly go through each one of my hosts and configure those individually. So that would be a really big time saver for most, I'm sure.
Well, the other thing is config assist also makes some recommendations like, hey, you're not using the VDS. You want to use the VDS? It'll actually launch a migration wizard for you. So there's some stuff there that a lot of people may not have been aware of these features, or they may not have necessarily worked or set them up. And so kind of driving an easy way to get to all the right places, even high availability in DRS, if they're not enabled, you're going to get an alert. And, you know, everybody should have HA and DRS on. And so there's a little button you click and it takes you straight to the place for the checkbox, so to speak. So as soon as that VCSA is online and you've added those other hosts to the cluster, your next stop should really be config assist, and it's going to walk you through all the other places you need to go to finish the configuration in your environment.
So config assist will not only help you combine some of the tasks that you need to do, but it also does best practices?
Correct. It's basically, it takes kind of what we were doing with the health checks before and takes that to a new level of actually walking you through, in some cases, the remediation to best practice.
I like it.
Yeah, and what a nice benefit that is as well, because we know that the configuration of an environment is not just this static one-time thing. These virtualized environments are living entities. They always change. And I think the nice thing about this particular feature is that it's always running and it's always looking for these changes and will help you maintain those best practices as well, not only for the initial deployment, but for those ongoing operations.
Absolutely. So Pete, we had you on a couple of weeks ago to talk about storage performance in general, but also there's a lot of new upgrades to the performance in vSAN 6.6. John touched on them a little bit last week, but I'd love to get your opinion on some of the specifics around what changed in vSAN 6.6 to make it more performant.
Yeah, most certainly, Pete. So really the performance for vSAN 6.6 and that those specific improvements that we see as an end result of those improvements really focus in two specific areas. One is the really addressing some of the items in the data path that could be optimized or improved. And I believe John mentioned last week a little bit about improving the checksumming process that really can have a profound impact on the effective performance that we see in these virtualized environments running vSAN.
Yeah.
There were also some significant improvements around the destaging process for writes that are being ingested into the write buffer, then being destaged to the capacity tier. And really what that allows is for these environments that have very bursty workloads to be able to more efficiently process those incoming IOs and fully destage them to the backing storage so that it can make room for the new incoming writes. And that's really what that is all about there. We've also made some improvements around the object manager that handles these incoming writes. And really what that is going to be doing is reducing the amount of CPU overhead that is needed for ingesting these writes. And once you do that, that frees up those CPU cycles to handle other activities. And I think really circling back to one of the key values around vSAN is its ultimate efficiency around how much overhead is needed to actually process these IOs.
There's almost like a rhythm to how you describe performance, to where it's like a subtle excitement, but it's like just a complete, you're breaking it apart piece by piece. It's fun to listen to always. Like I'm feeling like I'm like the giddy little kindergartner. Like, it's so much faster. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. You know, it's like, wait a minute. Who is this guy? And like, you've got this, but it's not like you adopt a monotone. You've got like a rhythm to how you're describing, like it moves the IO. You're much more structured. I don't know. Meanwhile, I'm over here like, we poured jet fuel on it. It's so much awesome. Kids and old people are not allowed near the cluster. It's too fast. Too fast. Too many IO queues. Parallelization.
See, that's what brings in the audience numbers, though. So let's hold on to that part for sure.
Woo. Ladies and gentlemen, caffeine is the only drug used by the Virtually Speaking podcast.
Winning.
Pete, talk a little bit about intelligent rebuilds.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the questions that we get quite often here is, what is a rebuild? And I think it's first, you know, worth us kind of stepping back and looking at, when we think about any sort of a storage system, one of the roles that it needs to really provide is the ability to service those storage requests, as well as being able to provide the redundancy of the data that is stored on there. And so various storage systems will have this redundancy laid out in several different ways. Now, when you have a distributed storage mechanism like vSAN, you have to ensure that there's that redundancy there as well. In the event that there are some changes to where the underlying storage subsystem, that being vSAN, has to ensure or make changes to that data to be able to ensure the redundancy of that data, that's going to really initiate some of these ideas around rebuilding or resyncing this data. And so this idea around intelligent rebuilds focus on these specific activities. And in vSAN 6.6, we've made a lot of changes here. And what this is really going to do is bring down that overhead that was needed to move the data around in order to satisfy some of the VMs that are assigned their specific performance and protection policies.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part that vSAN 6.6 looked at really enhancing was this idea around the intelligent rebuilds using enhanced rebalancing. And what this is going to do is it's going to improve the placement of the components that make up an individual object, that being a VMDK, for instance. And it's going to be able to split those larger components into smaller components across that vSAN data store so that you effectively improve the efficiency of that vSAN data store. You can fit more items on there. When we were looking at how the existing arrangement was in the past, when you had these situations where these larger components needed to be rebalanced or moved over to another host,
right?
Simply the size of that component was certainly a challenge in being able to spread those components out evenly. And now that's all automatic in being able to split those components out. It will look at various conditions within the vSAN cluster and make those choices accordingly.
Now, my question is, I know there still is a rebuild button. And can you explain if and when anyone would want to mash it? I feel like that button, it just exists because people want to be able to push a button. But
yeah, so the... Sorry.
Look, kids, a new button.
It's so shiny.
So when we're looking at rebalancing a cluster, there's really two ways that a cluster can be rebalanced. One is a proactive rebalancing, and then another is a reactive rebalancing. The proactive rebalancing is what you're referring to, John, in the sense that when there is a large delta between hosts and the capacity that they're using, vSAN's smart enough to be able to present a button to the end user saying, would you like to rebalance the existing data that's within the vSAN data store so that it can better distribute that data across those hosts? It will look at various elements within those hosts. And if that delta is large enough, then it's going to certainly give the end user an option. The enhanced rebalancing with respect to what I was referring to is more of a reactive rebalancing. This is going to occur when there are capacity levels that exceed about 80% or so. It's a soft number, but it's around 80%. And that's where it's going to do some of the rebalancing for the end user. So they don't need to, you know, be concerned if they need to certainly press a button at any given time.
Got it.
So the next part that we've really focused on looking at is how to improve this scenario in which vSAN is trying to repair the existing components. And so I'll share a little scenario here that might be common in an environment. Let's suppose we have a 4 or a 5 node vSAN cluster, and one of the hosts simply disappears or, you know, went offline. We're going to assume for the first 60-minute period of time that host is going to come back. We don't want to initiate a rebuild right away because it may have been a planned event, you know, or some minor disruption. In the past, after that 60-minute window, we would initiate the sort of a rebuild. Once that rebuild kicked off, though, it was going to run until full completion. Whether or not that original host came back or not during that rebuild process.
Oh, that's a waste.
It was a big waste. And certainly when you're dealing with some of these components that were very large in size, that was what many users found as a real challenge, was that maybe you had a maintenance window that took a little bit longer than was anticipated. And that was certainly a real challenge. So in vSAN 6.6, we've introduced some new logic and an additional method for this sort of smart, efficient repair. And now with the smart efficient repairs, there are two methods for repairing of these offline components that reappear after the 60-minute period of time. It's going to look at which method is going to be most cost-effective in terms of the effort that's needed in order to complete that repair process. So during the repair process, if that host comes back online that originally had some of those components, it's going to calculate which one is going to complete sooner, whether it's a full resync or a rebuild, or simply a resync of those existing components on that host that came back up.
That's much smarter.
Much smarter. And it really, the overall goal here is just to reduce the amount of backend activities that are occurring on vSAN so that you can free up resources to serve those VMs that need those IOs.
Yeah.
So what you're telling me about the resyncs is I should quit overthinking it, let it do its thing, and that, again, vSAN is smarter than me.
Yes. vSAN became much smarter than all of us with 6.6. I think when we take a step back at some of these features and these enhancements, what we really see is the ability for it to accommodate more scenarios, more situations, whether it's, you know, failure handling or proactive maintenance, things of that sort. vSAN is really being able to accommodate these scenarios with less effort, and reducing that overhead or that effort really just frees up those resources to do the things that it was originally intended to do.
Pete is right.
Wow, that actually works for both of you. Why did I not record John is right? You know, I'm going back to Mexico and I will get more snarky quotes. So I'm not telling anyone where or when, because I'm sure someone who listens to this show would just show up.
Yeah, but for sure.
And so the last area of improvement with regards to these intelligent rebuilds is what we call partial repairs. And so in order to understand this improvement, we basically need to sort of understand the way that vSAN had worked in the past. In the past, you would have these objects that would be spread across the hosts, and these objects are made up of these individual components. And in the event that there was, let's say, a host outage or a host went absent, after that period of time in which vSAN would recognize that, hey, it's no longer coming back, I need to begin the rebuild process, it would look for space in order to be able to perform that rebuild. But it would look at it sort of at that object level or even the replica level. And if it wasn't able to completely repair or rebuild that other replica, it wouldn't begin the process at all. So now with vSAN 6.6, we're able to do sort of a best effort repair. Imagine a scenario where, you know what, you can't clean all of your house within a given period of time, but you're going to try to clean as much as you can. This is sort of in a similar way. It's going to repair as much as it can so that in the event and when there are additional resources within that cluster, then it can fully complete the repair process. And this is really just more about being able to do as much as possible, as quickly as possible, so that when those sources free up later on, then you can certainly complete the repair process.
So what is the determining factor on whether or not it's going to do a partial or not? Is there a certain...
So this would be like if there's a fault domain available, but you don't necessarily have enough to completely repair. So like, let's say you're at FTT at 2, RAID 6, you have 6 hosts. You lose 2 hosts, so you're down to 4. One comes back online, so you have 5 hosts, but not 6. You don't have enough to fully match the RAID 6 level protection, but you could go ahead and get that 5th host, providing one parity chunk or one additional mirror or so forth to heal that, right?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the scenario. And I think it will show up really in a variety of ways. One is within a single vSAN cluster or even a stretched cluster arrangement as well. So all of these new enhancements with regards to the intelligent rebuilds will be able to apply in the variety of topologies that exist within the data center.
That makes sense.
I like talking performance with Pete. And he and I have been having a lot of discussions internally with PMs and engineers about something, because there's that old quote about, you know, you should try to measure everything. You can't, you know, succeed at it unless you can measure it. Kind of that Jack, what's his name, who did the GE stuff. If you spend any time around Six Sigma people, they get really obsessed over measuring metrics. But a key thing that a lot of people miss, I feel like, is measuring the things that matter. It's kind of like if you ever did a show interface on a Cisco switch, you know, iOS will basically vomit 14 metrics. And you're like, all right, I got 0 runts and giants. What is going on? You know, it's like, but if you don't know what things are, if you don't know the relevance are, and that's something that I feel like has been very much a theme in with the vSAN engineering team of what they've tried to do with performance, is try to measure things, but measure things with context, as well as measure the right things. Because, I mean, giants in your data center? Is that a huge, you know, concern?
No, it's not. It's not. So there are some new metrics, right, in 6.6, right, Pete?
Yes, there are. And, you know, this is really certainly something that's very close to my heart, as you can imagine. But I was really excited to see some of these additional metrics that were provided and built right into the performance service. Some of the things that in previous editions that we didn't necessarily have visibility to, we have now within the performance service. That being things like the network adapter throughput, packets per second, packet loss rate, which, you know, if you're thinking about a distributed storage system, you're always highly dependent on that network in order to achieve, you know, some of the efforts that that system needs. So looking and having visibility now to network metrics are really, really important. We also have new host metrics that also relate to that as well. We can look at, you know, again, things like the network adapter throughput and so forth. We can look at it at various levels, which is extremely useful. We can look at VM kernel as a single object, and however it is delivered, whether it's a leg or a single link, we have that visibility now. We also have resync activities that are now exposed per disk group within each host. Things like resync IOPS, resync throughput, and resync latency. This is something that is extremely important that we've seen in environments that are, you know, maybe really active, but we need to understand what kind of activity is generating that traffic. And circling back to when we think about, you know, what's the advantage of vSAN and it being fully integrated right into the hypervisor, is we have the understanding of what kind of traffic is being generated. So this is really how this is showing up. Now we get to exploit the fact that we can really visually understand that data much more easily, simply because we're fully integrated.
I like that you've got the ability to see potential contention on things from rebuilds or other, you know, background IO that's not just the regular IO. Particularly because the ability that we've exposed the ability to control the resyncs and things like that. We've got some added, you know, an added dial, so to speak, for that now. So you can look at your environment if you're under full load, and if you want to slow down that resync, if you're willing to take that slightly longer recovery period, you could now slide that dial and you at least have some graphs to know what the impact of that is.
Yeah, that's a really good point, John. One of the features that wasn't mentioned in the intelligent rebuilds overview was the ability to throttle some of that resync traffic. Now, that's something that we like to think of as, you know, sort of an adjustment that would just be a temporary sort of adjustment in a production environment. But how you would make for those accommodations would be based off of some of the metrics that you would see within the performance service. And those metrics are these new metrics that we're talking about right now.
I like it.
So, one thing about all these extra things we're measuring is these are all going into the performance database. And as a reminder, the performance database can be exported as part of your log bundle in the event you're working with GSS on an issue. And they have tools that they can graph and visualize that on the back end. So that can really accelerate any type of troubleshooting of any issue when you're working with support on that. As well as also, there's the new verbose mode. There's a small checkbox, and that's to be turned on at the direction of GSS. And that really turns logging up to 11. You don't want to leave that on by default. I think instead of the normal 90 days to roll the performance database, I think it's like 2 at that point. You know, as we've been making vSAN smarter, we also want to make our support operations smarter and make them a lot more, I guess, swift and being able to isolate and identify issues. And so some of these things, obviously, they provide a lot of visibility to the user, but there's also a lot of increased measuring going on behind the scenes to help support and engineering improve the product.
Yeah, it's really all about, you know, finding the root cause of a problem. And I think in those particular cases where someone reaches out to GSS and they need that assistance, that's really going to benefit both a GSS and the end user for being able to, you know, find the root cause of a problem that they might be running into. And the faster they can do that, the faster they can find the solution.
Sure. Yeah.
So when we look at these features overall, and even when we get back to some of the features that Jace touched on last week, we see sort of this theme here in that we see a lot of enhancements that are focused around simplicity. And then we see a lot of these other features that are focused on resiliency and performance. And oftentimes those topics are seen as mutually exclusive to each other. But when we think about, you know, a storage system or taking a step back further and looking at an entire environment, you need the combination there for it to be really well balanced in order to provide a complete solution. And that's where I was really excited about vSAN 6.6, because we address each one of these in a very balanced way.
All right. Well, Pete, we're going to let you get out of here soon, but real quick, I know you had a little bit of input into this one, so I'd love to hear your feedback on what happened with vSAN 6.6 as it pertains to this new vRealize Operations Management Pack.
Yeah, so there's a lot of exciting work being done there in particular. For those that may not be familiar with what the vRealize Operations Management Pack is, this is simply a module that is installed that really extends the functionality of vRealize Operations so that it can see vSAN-related data, whether it's health-related data or performance data and so forth. With the additions or the enhancements to vSAN 6.6, in particular to the associated APIs that vRealize Operations uses, now vRealize Operations can see even more data into vSAN. And this is really going to offer up a lot of really interesting things for a vRealize Operations user. And I'm really excited about some of the work that's being done here. And stay tuned for some really great improvements specific to the vRealize Operations Management Pack for vSAN.
Awesome. So how does someone get the management pack?
The management pack is available out on solutionsexchange.vmware.com. And is available for any vRealize Operations user that is running vRealize Operations standard and above. And so it really exposes, or it gives a lot of customers out there the ability to really enhance that visibility and the understanding of their vSAN environment.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I like that they split that out. It's worthy of its own pack.
Yeah, it really is. It's I think it's good certainly the other BU has been very kind in allowing me to work with them and seeing, you know, some of the activities that they're working on and asking for feedback. So based off of what I'm seeing, and I apologize for the tease there, but there's really some great things to come.
Oh, yeah? Something we may be able to look forward to for VMworld?
Very much so, I would think.
Very cool. All right, Pete. Well, I think we've taken enough of your time. I do appreciate you coming back in to join us. As always, we open the invitation to you to come anytime you've got something to say. We'd love to have you on. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you, John. Much appreciated. And yeah, looking forward to the next time.
Awesome. John, you got anything else before we take off?
I was just going to say, make sure to check out VirtualBlox. We've got a lot of blogs that are being slowly teased out and released day by day about this vSAN 6.6 launch. See upcoming events. You and I will be at Dell EMC World. And I think we may have some special guests there.
We do. No hints, though. But yeah, we've got a very special guest for Dell EMC World. And we're also going to be at VMon the week after that. So it's going to be pretty fun.
Yep.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud or iTunes by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're going to be bringing on one of Cohesity's newest employees. No hints. Bye for now. All right, I'll give you one hint. He rides a skateboard and loves Justin Bieber.
Pete is right.
Oh, yeah.
Enough of this jibber jabber.